When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It is a Mayo Monday. Gerard Mayo, the head coach of the New England Patriots, will be with us at 8:30 this morning. And Boomer Esiason will join us. And we will talk all things NFL with Boomer in about an hour at 8. Courtney is off at jury duty or will be shortly. We'll see if she gets chosen to be on some kind of long, high-profile case or whether she is back tomorrow morning.
Scranton Strangler.
We have some leads left. Curtis, good morning.
Good morning, Greg. I loathe to admit that I'm wrong, but prior to this season, I said it would be a success if Drake May was great. And he is, and it's not. And the reason being is I watched the Bills and the Rams excellent game yesterday on Fox. Tom was awesome. Josh Allen was spectacular. Mm. You could call it perfect. And they lost. And Josh Allen has never been to a Super Bowl. He's been to one AFC championship. And he is the number one comp, if Drake May is what we think he is sort of like a Josh Allen Jr.
Mm-hmm.
And their coach, at the end of that game, made the dumbest decision you could possibly make. There was only one thing you could do. I honestly thought maybe they'll just kick the field goal, kick it deep, get the ball back with three timeouts, because the way Josh Allen was playing, he was going to go down the field and score a touchdown. There were, what, 2 to 3 different times, Wiggs, in that game where the Rams had a 17-point lead,
mm-hmm.
and it was immediate comeback. Touchdown, game back on the line. There was a blocked punt for a touchdown. Sean McDermott single-handedly cost the Bills a chance to win that game because he didn't have a feel or an understanding or I don't know what else. And part of me blames Josh Allen for even calling the timeout.
Mm.
But the way it unfolded was the Bills had the ball at the 1 yard line. They had all timeouts after a pass interference. They're down 10. They need two scores and they can throw the ball into the end zone three times and kick a field goal. Or they score.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing you couldn't do is sneak it, waste a timeout, and then give the ball back to the Rams where they have two timeouts mm-hmm. only left to stop them and lose the game.
Right.
And that's what happened. So I don't know if Mayo's the guy. I don't know what it is. But it is not simply having a great quarterback, because if that was the case, Josh Allen would have a Super Bowl by now.
You got to have a great coach, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
And are you potentially squandering away the Drake May years if you don't make a change when it comes to Gerard Mayo? Or is he going to grow into that great coach mode that mm-hmm. Bill Belichick had?
Well, not really, because mm-hmm. if you look at Josh Allen, the guy we're talking about, I don't think they necessarily squandered away years, because I think right now where Josh Allen is, he's at like the peak. So it's now time for you to take advantage of Josh Allen's potential. So you could find the right coach for the right situation that will help you get over that hump if you don't feel like Sean McDermott is the guy in Buffalo.
And McVay, that offense, the way that Nacua touchdown where mm-hmm. Cooper Kupp had that block.
The little tunnel screen.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like you watch the Patriots and it's like watching Pop Warner. compared to these teams. It's so pathetic.
And it's so basic. Like, that's a basic play that everybody runs in the league. But third and five, it's safe. And you knew they were blitzing, and it gets the ball out of the quarterback's hands.
And the way Brady described it, he's like, this is your zero blitz reaction. Mm-hmm. Like, do you think Van Pelt even knows what that is?
I hope he does.
Oh, it was so bad. Right. But anyway.
All right, Curtis, thank you. Wiggy, good morning.
All right, good morning. So, Sunday was a great day. Obviously, the Pats didn't play, but it was a great day for all you college football fans out there, myself included, because we finally got to unveil the college football playoff bracket. And I think the college football, they did a good job with this one. There's still like the little bits of hiccups on how maybe, you know, now the whole Alabama versus SMU who lost in an ACC championship game. But for the most part, I think they got it right.
I was going to say, you think they got it right?
I think they did get it right. I look at Alabama had three losses, right? I know that they're in the SEC, and then it becomes strength of schedule versus ACC and those type of things. But I think when you look at the way it all kind of played out, I think SMU was still a good enough team that plays in a good enough conference. Now, granted, maybe it's down a year or maybe it's up a year, but they play in a Power Four conference where there's still enough talent in that conference for you to look at them and go, okay, they lost in the ACC championship game. It was a close game, that they should not be bumped for a three-loss team when they only have two losses and one of their losses came in a championship game. So I think that the college football worked out good. There's still a little tweaking because Curtis brought this up. If you look at it, probably maybe Penn State or even Texas has the easiest route in there, the fifth and sixth seed, where you would think that the higher seeds would have the easiest route. But based on just kind of the way the whole how you see them might need to be changed a little bit.
Wait till next year when the North Carolina Tar Heels are a number one seed in the bracket, Curtis.
It's easy to do.
I mean, the ACC, could you imagine Billy O versus Bill Belichick again?
I mean, look at SMU. They came from nowhere. Boise State came from nowhere.
All right,
Indiana.
Wiggy, you are happy with the bracket.
I am happy with it.
Okay.
I can't wait till it starts December 20th and 21st.
All right. It's been a while, so I thought I might share a remote work lead this morning. One of the more hotly debated moves that the incoming president has said he is going to make is requiring all federal employees to return to in-person work.
All right.
Some people are upset about that. I was wondering if you would like to take a guess at what percentage of federal employees currently are going into the office, are working from the office.
Federal employee?
Yes. What percent do you think work from the office currently?
25%.
25?
I have to guess like 40%.
14%.
14%. All right. This is Speaker of the House Mike Johnson talking about this very thing on Friday.
There was a report that came out today, I don't know if you all have seen it, but someone did a little survey of how many federal employees are actually working in the office. By one estimate, it may be about 1%, if you don't count the security personnel that are covering these buildings. That is absurd, and it's not something the American people will stand for. And so one of the first things that I think you'll see is a demand from the new administration and from all of us in Congress that federal workers return to their desks and get back to the work that they're supposed to be doing. I think that is common sense. What you're going to see here, the overriding theme here, is a return to common sense and a return to accountability and efficiency in government. I think that's going to serve the people well.
Okay.
Wow, 1%.
So that must mean that like everybody that doesn't actually have to be somewhere, because you think of the TSA, you think of people that are like in our military that are stationed, those are federal employees.
Yes.
So everybody that actually has an office job must not work at the office.
Wow. And it's been going on since the pandemic. How do we not know that?
I mean,
have you tried to get anything done when dealing with the government? You wonder why it takes so long? It's because nobody's working in the actual office ever.
Wow.
Less than 1%. It was shocking to me.
What?
Isn't that... I guess
that's stunning. True. I went to D.C. for Thanksgiving last year, and I just assumed it was Thanksgiving week. But that's probably every week. It was barren. There was nobody there.
So eventually, I guess they will have to return to the office. And if you're one of those people, then we feel for you. But
that is absolutely amazing to me that 1%.
Less than 1%.
Is SEAL Team 6 working remotely?
I don't have any idea.
It, though. I mean, you come in here and, like, no one works Friday. No one works Monday.
Yeah.
It's kind of skeleton crew on Tuesday, and then what, maybe Wednesday, Thursday?
Right. Yeah. Well, the Tuesday's a sales meeting. Every other day,
everybody
it's basically
has to be
empty.
Here for the sales meeting, and that's
yeah,
it.
So I guess
all
it
right.
is.
Well, those are our leads. We are going to get to They Said It coming up in just a little bit. That's a quick back and forth on what they said over the weekend. And we'll certainly discuss what one of Bill Belichick's BFF said about his potential return to college football and how Bill feels about it.
I have a question for now, but I asked it Saturday. Can we all agree now, given Bill's desire to go set up his kids at North Carolina, that the centrifugal force, the one entity of the Holy Trinity of Patriots employees that was dead set on winning and winning only was Tom Brady? Given how Bill is desiring to go to either the Jaguars or go to UNC and how Robert has conducted business, well, winning was not the singular focus for Bill Belichick.
I think it was the singular focus. I think... Curtis, I think Steve Belichick was a pretty good play caller when it came to the NFL.
I mean, he's doing a good job in Washington. He's got their defense better this year than they were last year.
This Patriots defense would probably be better if he was here over DeMarcus Covington.
Yeah, so I mean, I think if, you know,
you're missing my point. Like, yes, I agree. He's not a moron.
Well, you're saying he didn't care about winning because he gave his kids jobs.
No, it's about getting his buddies and surrounding himself with friends as opposed to getting the
best
people.
Yeah, but every coach does that, though. If you look at the majority of head coaches.
So Andy Reid's good friends with Steve Spagnuolo?
No. But if you look at the majority of head coaches.
No, I'm asking about that, right?
I don't know their connection.
There's not one. Okay, Spagnuolo was with the Giants.
So maybe that's one guy. But if you look at a majority of coaches, their connections are with guys that they know.
Well, McVay got to the Super Bowl with Wade Phillips. He wasn't friends with Wade Phillips.
I think his dad and Wade Phillips were really good friends.
Wade Phillips is one of the best defensive coordinators in the NFL.
But the point that I'm trying to make to you is that a large portion of head coaches hire people that they have a good relationship that you would call friends, and you would even call some would be family. Like when you look at
When it comes to nepotism, I don't think Andy Reid is a good example to use of somebody who doesn't participate.
He had his kids on the staff.
Of course, but I'm saying that the
Shanahan did it. Shanahan did it. Who's the other? Jesus, why am I drawing a blank on the other coach that
Kubiak's kid?
It might have been him, but that I think like that's the nature of it. If you look at and that's what we even complained about here with Mayo, not allowing Mayo on the offensive side of the ball to hire guys that he might have had a relationship with. Because then maybe there becomes issues with that.
Right. And there were issues when you hire your buddy who would take a bullet for you and Matt Patricia to coach out of position. And what other NFL teams saw with that, my guess is the reason he didn't have as many opportunities was that it was more important for him to have loyalty around him as opposed to talent.
That's every coaching staff, though.
Okay, and that's fine as long as you're winning.
But your point is that doesn't mean he doesn't
It's not the most important thing for him.
Why? Because he hires his kids?
Because he makes up his staff with boobs and his kids, yes. Joe Judge, Matt Patricia, I mean, total boobs.
Matt Patricia was a pretty good, decent defensive coordinator.
I think the Eagles just scored again.
The defensive coordinator, he was pretty decent.
Sean, would you say Patricia's an overrated DC?
Yes.
Thank you.
Highly overrated.
Okay.
All right. Well, those are our leads this morning. They said it coming up. Here is Shime in Courtney's absence with what is trending right now.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Trending now, brought to you by Subaru of New England. The big news of the night last night was Juan Soto has officially signed his contract with the New York Mets, worth $765 million over the next 15 years, the richest deal in baseball history. The Chiefs escape yet again on Sunday Night Football as they beat the Chargers with a last-second field goal, got it to doink off the post and right through the uprights to win 19-17. That will clinch them the AFC West. Patriots had a bye, so no loss there. That's a step in the right direction. Celtics have a few days off. They welcome the Pistons to the Garden on Thursday. Bruins head to Winnipeg to take on the Jets on Tuesday night, as they are now 7-2 in their last nine games played under new interim coach Joe Sacco. College football this weekend, Georgia beat Texas 22-19 to claim the SEC title. Clemson beat SMU to become the ACC champions. Oregon took home the Big Ten championship as they beat Penn State. And the college football playoff bracket is set, as Wiggy talked about in his lead. Oregon, Georgia, Boise State, and Arizona State will get the first round byes as the highest ranked conference champions, champs. I'm actually really excited to see Boise State running back Ashton Jaunte play against legitimate competition.
Yeah.
Not necessarily just Mountain West teams, but teams that are like Penn State, if Penn State beats SMU in the first round.
Well, he did play against Oregon and rushed for almost 200 yards.
Yes, he did. That's true. Oregon's defense, though, not amazing.
All right.
And I believe the Wasabi Bowl at Fenway is UConn v. UNC.
That's correct, Greg.
So maybe Bill will be in attendance on December 28th at Fenway Park.
I love it. I mean, maybe. Should be a real
wonder. The new head coach will be in play, so that is a good point. Checking out, hey, what do I have with this team? And we know Bill loves to scout.
Uh-huh. And then Billy O will be at the Pinstripe Bowl at Yankee Stadium, correct?
It's true.
First ever BC-Nebraska matchup.
Look at that. Oh, you get to see Dylan Raiola, Patrick Mahomes wannabe.
Yeah.
Trending Now was brought to you by Subaru of New England. Get a new Subaru during the Subaru of New England Share the Love event, and Subaru retailers will donate $300 to charity. SubaruofNewEngland.com. That's what's trending. Here's Curtis with your weather.
All right, Shimaru, thank you very much. It's currently 34 degrees, partly cloudy. Afternoon high, 45.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
It's James Kell from the Sleeper King Football Podcast. In fantasy football, sleepers can win you championships, and that's why I am here. Every episode is just 15 to 20 minutes long, every Tuesday through Friday. Subscribe to the Sleeper King Podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your pods.
Brain tonight.
It is a Patriots Monday on the bye week, and we will talk with Gerard Mayo at 8:30 this morning. Boomer Esiason coming up in about a half an hour on This Week in the NFL. Curtis, your outrageous verbal assault on Bill Belichick and his desire to win has enraged some who listen to this show. You need to address your hate of Bill Belichick.
Well, you're going to get it for a couple more years. I hate to tell it to you, but facts are facts. And Bill Belichick, from what I gather, is being locked out of the NFL from having the power he wants. So he's throwing a fit and going to college. And I marvel at this. You know what Bill Belichick looks like as a head coach? Every other failed part of his tree without the greatest player to ever play. Look at what Daboll does. Look at what Josh McDaniels does. Look what Joe Judge did. Look at what Matt Patricia did. Look at what Mangini did. All of these people tried to be Bill, but they couldn't bring Brady with them. And now we're sitting here, and Bill Belichick, instead of saying, okay, I'll have some humble pie, I'll work for you, GM of the day, I'll coach, I'll surpass Shula, I'll go to a good team. Like, if Bill was coaching the Bills yesterday, they win that game.
Yeah.
I would love Bill Belichick to coach the Bills, but he won't do it because he wants all the power in the world.
I just don't believe that there's not interest in Bill currently in the NFL. If you're an owner of a team that is struggling, how can you not look at Bill Belichick as somebody who can come in and fix things for you? I don't.
But so you think these guys want to lose?
No, I think these guys, I think that these owners, pardon my French, some of them are moronic, and they think that Bill is washed up. That's what I think. And so they're like,
you do?
I think that some of them believe, like, you know what? It's probably better. Maybe Raheem is more relatable and is a little bit more innovated when it comes to today's NFL, meaning 2024, versus Bill, who maybe the NFL has passed him by.
Greg, look at what the Patriots were left with when Bill left. if you are Arthur Blank and you say, okay, Bill wants to come in 4 years or 3 years, have all the power, all the control, final say on all football matters to get to Shula and surpass him, and then leave, where's your organization in 3 years?
But I suspect that maybe some of the owners put that if you're saying the roster, Bill left the roster bereft of any talent. I think the owners may put that on Robert Kraft as opposed to Bill Belichick.
But clearly,
on the reluctance of Robert Kraft to spend.
Right.
For
I would just say their actions speak louder than words. The fact that he's doing this suggests to me that you said yourself he was doing this to tell people he's open for business. If everybody wanted him to come to their team, they would have found that out themselves and called him.
Yeah, but he can't take any calls. He's still being paid by the New England Patriots.
Right. Bill has an agent. I am certain that coaches get information, especially Bill Belichick, pretty quickly.
All right. Well, let's get to this.
It's time for...
Larry Bird's not walking through that door, fans.
Would not say that I'm Mona Lisa Vito of the football world.
They
want you to cook the dinner. At least they ought to let you shop for some of the groceries.
Said it.
Wake up to Del Mondino and have me face him. Maybe I'll drill him in the eye.
They said it.
I'm just going to say it.
Are we starting with Bill this morning, Shime?
Yeah, Greg, I think we should. As one of Bill Belichick's closest buddies, I tend to at least listen when Mike Lombardi talks about Bill Belichick. Maybe not when he talks about other things, but when he talks about Bill Belichick, I will listen. And here is what Mike Lombardi said about the idea of Bill Belichick to UNC over the weekend.
Bill has always been somebody who loves coaching, right? And I think the way college football has changed dramatically, you know, it's gone from, hey, we want you to come to our school, you know, look at our campus, look at our new facilities, to a pay-for-play environment. It's a completely different game. You know, and I think the reason Nick Saban left college football was those 20 guys lined up out of his office the day after the season, they wanted raises. That's pro football. I think Bill's been in that environment for his whole life, pro football. Understanding how to manage a salary cap, understanding how to manage a locker room as it relates to a salary cap. And I think when you look over the landscape of the NFL, I think the question mark really becomes, where are the great jobs? I think that the landscape for a lot of coaches has changed. College football is still going to be challenging, still going to be tough, but it is a pro sport now. It's pretty clear. So to me, when you look at it in that context and you look at what the University of North Carolina has to offer, it certainly could make sense. The main question most people would want to know is, would you give up chasing Don Shula's record to go to college? And if you ask that question, you really don't know who Bill Belichick is. Because Belichick's about coaching. He's not about, I'm chasing a record.
God, does that guy have no shame?
If he goes to college, then he would be spot on, right? If Bill takes the UNC job, it really isn't about the record.
It shows you that he doesn't care about the record.
It is really all about coaching. And
do you believe that?
It might be realistic, though, because, right. I mean, Andy Reid could pass him in 6 years. Like, even if he goes to the NFL and joins the Jaguars and he's winning four, five, six games a season for the next 4 years,
right.
Andy Reid could just easily pass him 5 years later because of Patrick Mahomes.
And I guess you could say Bill Belichick cares more about not being told what to do than the record.
Speaking of Jacksonville, another couple picks for my guy, Mac Jones, yesterday.
That second interception, Greg, was my favorite Twitter clip, maybe of all time.
Won the football game.
Yep, that's what happens when Tennessee scores 6 points. The Patriots would have won if Tennessee only scored 6 points as well. But that was one of the greatest interceptions I've ever seen in my life. It made me so happy.
I think you got another scoreigami yesterday in that Dolphins game, by the way.
You did, 32-26, little scoreigami action.
I know you love a good scoreigami.
Who doesn't? That's always good stuff. No. Unique.
All right, well.
Oh, my God. There's a news story about from The Athletic about the Red Sox negotiations with Juan Soto.
Yes.
You know, behind the scenes. The Red Sox last meeting with Scott Boras was Saturday via Zoom, and they didn't discuss Juan Soto. That's when the team officials knew they weren't going to be a finalist.
So they knew on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
So why the nonsense about them being on the phone with him essentially right up until he made the decision?
Kings of interest,
because
baby.
People are dumb. What the American public doesn't know is what makes them the American public, from Tommy Boy. Zielinski was right.
It's infuriating. It's, and do not, I said this earlier, don't argue with me about $65 million when the Dodgers have a $1 billion payroll and John Henry is a billionaire. Like you're right there. You had a chance. You could have outdone the Mets from the start.
Mm-hmm.
And when Steve Cohen said, I'm going to go $50 million over everybody else, you could have said, we're going to go $75 million over everybody else.
They didn't want to play that game of chicken.
Well, they told us they were playing it. I mean,
they said that we're in on them. There's a number based on what we don't know what that number is. I mean, I think we're all to believe because of all the baseball people that it was somewhere around $700 million. And they got to a point where it was like, well, they're going to outbid us here. And we're going to try in every way to hope that we can pull on Soto's heartstrings and roll out Pedro and roll out Big Poppy and be like the Dominican love. And look what we've done with Dominican ball players here in Boston. They rolled all that out. And Soto said, nope, I want the cash. And I don't want it deferred. I want it all up front. And I want it now. I don't want it in 30 years. So I think that was part of maybe where the Red Sox are like, well, we're probably not going to get this guy.
What's next, Shine?
Well, maybe there is a guy the Red Sox could get. So Chris Cotillo over the weekend had reported that the Red Sox are very much interested in Garrett Crochet, could be in the market for him. John Morosi talked about that. Here was what Morosi said about the possibility of the Sox getting Garrett Crochet.
The Crochet trade is getting closer, that it's now increasingly possible that he'll be moved while we're here, at least by Thursday of this week. And to Chris's reporting about the Red Sox, my response to that would be they're one player away from jumping right into this conversation because they've got at the high end of their prospect group a shortstop in Marcelo Meyer, who I am told they are more willing to listen on and include in this deal than was originally thought. And so if Meyer becomes part of the conversation, then you can construct a deal that makes sense, I think, for both sides. The Red Sox are really high on Christian Campbell, who can play multiple up-the-middle positions right now, Tom. So, yes, we have to sort out Soto and the free agents like Fried and Burns, but I think a Crochet trade could be days away.
Okay.
All right. Well, that'd be all good, right?
That would be good. Step in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
So when Alex Speer on Sunday was saying the Red Sox were in on him, he was either lying or being lied to.
Correct.
They knew. They had a Zoom on Saturday. I'm reading it right now. And they didn't discuss Juan Soto with Scott Boras. Like, God, you guys, stop being played by this ownership group. They don't give a damn about
you. So what was the conversation then?
Probably about other clients.
Who's Crochet's
he's not agent? He would be a sign. It would be a trade. He wouldn't be signing.
No, but I mean, there potentially could they have been? Could they have gotten to the point where it's like, listen, we're not going to get Soto, but you got everybody else in Major League Baseball. Who could we potentially go after? Because if you really look at it, where the Red Sox are, and listen, I was all over Juan Soto, but where did
just
they,
like you were all over Shohei?
Shohei,
and both like, oh, good move.
But they weren't in on Shohei.
I'm glad we didn't get Shohei.
They were in on too
much money. Too much money to put into one player.
The Shohei thing. We knew they were never in on Shohei.
They were not a finalist for Juan Soto.
Listen, I had said I would love for them to be in on Shohei. Just me. That's what I said.
So, Curtis, who do you think it came down to? I mean,
the two New York teams.
Okay. So Yankees, Mets,
yep.
And the Red Sox were just there to bid it up at the beginning.
And as I said all along, it was mutually beneficial for Scott.
But were they bidding?
They were.
Answer yes or no.
They were nowhere near $700 million. They were not a legitimate player for Juan Soto. No.
I will say Sean McAdam and others are saying they put a $700 million offer.
I bet you that's what they're being told.
Curtis will tell you that's all lies.
Well, if they had, so work with me. If they were at $700 million on Saturday morning, they're on the phone with the agent of the guy they're offering more than they paid for the team, and his name doesn't come up. Guys, like, open your ears.
Because Boras says,
if you really want him, you just say, hey, give us last and final.
Right.
Last and final was $765.
Okay, but why did the Mets get last and final? Like, if
48 loves, hours after you spoke to him.
If he loves Pedro, he loves David Ortiz, he's always been a Red Sox fan.
Right.
Like, why don't you get last and final? We'll give him 770.
Because
like,
Boris probably, because Boris said, listen, 700 is not getting it done. You want to get up to 750, 760? Okay, we'll have a conversation. But don't even utter Juan Soto's name out your mouth if you're not willing to come up off of 700 million.
And I mean, here's somebody, Curtis, in the Twitch chat, Dubs, who says, you don't offer $700 million as a publicity stunt. LMAO.
Well, it's legitimately that exactly.
No, it isn't, because now people are going to be like, well, why not?
Dubs, do you know what publicity stunt means?
But the baseball Brets of the world are going to be like, now take that $700 million and go after all these, you know, three, four, five players that are instantly going to make your team better, because they're going to add more to positions that you need than just one player.
Forget about us, okay? Saturday morning, the buzz around the 5K and everywhere was, this is the day we find out.
Yep.
Little did we know that the Red Sox brass had moved on entirely, to the point that they spoke with the person representing Juan Soto on Saturday morning and didn't even use his name.
Because
by Saturday, the Red Sox began to sense their chances fading.
Right.
Team officials met that day via video conference with Scott Boras, who appeared to be in a hotel room, but they did not discuss Juan Soto.
Because they knew they were out.
They should have said, can we have one more question?
Nope.
Can we have one more chance?
I'm doing the same thing if I'm Boras's agent. Don't even utter my client's name.
You mean so if you're Boris?
Don't even have his name hit your lips unless you're willing to get to $750 million. So they're like, listen, all right, we're out of this one. Hey, what about these other players, Scott?
All right, what's next, Shine?
Well, a conversation we have had on this program before about possible head coaching opportunities or openings would be Kyle Shanahan. Apparently, there were rumors circulating that the 49ers and Bears had discussed a trade of Shanahan to Chicago. Shanahan was asked about that after absolutely lighting up the Bears yesterday afternoon. Here is the question and Shanahan's response.
There's been some rumors over the webs that you could be traded to Chicago, and John called them comical. Do you have a word to describe those rumors?
I mean, I don't know why they come out, but, like, I don't want to be any place in the world more than here, and my family feels just as strong, if not a lot stronger. So, you know, I hope you guys are going to have to kick me out of here, so there's no way I'm making that decision.
Chris Shanahan, why would you, like... So there's rumors that they're going to trade him to Chicago?
Yes.
No. I mean, why would you want to leave?
Well, it wouldn't be his choice.
All right. So why would you trade a good coach when you look at what Shanahan's been able to accomplish? We all agree he's a good coach. I think their biggest issue is the quarterback.
Right.
So why would you move on from a good coach and now you're going to still find yourself in a situation where now the next guy you bring in, who is that? Is he going to be as good or better than Shanahan? Why roll those dice?
Never in a million years. I would not get rid of Shanahan, especially the way he's coaching offense in today's NFL.
No, I would just be like, all right, we got to make a decision. Is Brock Purdy the guy that's going to take this team to where we need it to be taken to?
And they lose their best player on offense.
Yeah, I mean, I was
insert
say,
like a rookie running back, and he scores three touchdowns.
Well, you have to get like the McCaffrey injury. That was, he was gone for almost the whole entire season.
He played one game, right, or two games.
You get a little excuse for that, I think.
Right, but then he's been able. Shanahan, as a great coach, has shown I can maybe not replace the production you get from McCaffrey, but I can find another guy. Their biggest question, and I think if you were to go to the Bay Area and ask anybody from there, the biggest question is Brock Purdy the guy? Can he get this team over the hump to winning the Super Bowl?
Speaking of this, somebody in the Twitch chat moments ago said that when it comes to the Juan Soto sweepstakes, the Red Sox are essentially Amen Corner. They took her to the prom. She doesn't even remember what their name is.
No.
I mean,
it's just so amazing. I
mean, like, you guys, I've never heard of this name in my life.
I mean, that's kind of what happened here.
Just Wiggy, like, they don't even talk about the guy that we believe that you're saying that they had $700 million on the table for
on
Saturday
morning. Yeah, but what's amazing is, no matter, they could have said $800 million, and you'd be like, no, that's not real.
Well, if
there
Scott
could
Boris-
be 30 MLB insiders all saying that there was... They were in on him.
They weren't, though.
So all those insiders are all lying.
No, that Saturday morning.
We're talking not about Saturday, but $700 million.
Right,
they
no
were
way.
In on him if they could get him for $600 million,
right.
I guess.
We found out about the $700 million on Sunday. They didn't even speak on Saturday. It's spin
wings.
No,
but there was information about the $700 million maybe on Friday that the Red Sox...
Curtis is saying that's what they are telling
right.
people. Is they are telling people that they offer.
So you're saying
so
Friday...
you know, it doesn't matter what anybody says
no,
then.
I'm saying...
really doesn't matter whether it's Sean Heyman, whether it's Jeff Passan, whether it's
so if you have
any baseball insider.
Okay, let's just focus on the facts that we have in front of us. If you have a $700
million...
We don't
have any facts.
If you have a $700 million
right.
offer... You don't mention his name?
Curtis, we don't have any facts. If you have a $700 million
right.
offer
right.
and Scott Boras says, don't utter my client's name unless you're willing to go to $750.
You would utter his name.
No,
of course you would.
Why? If you knew.
You've invested all this time and resources into pursuit of him.
But if you know you're not going higher than it's like if you're selling your house and you say, I'm not going anything under $800,000, and somebody is like, hey, listen, we'll give you $700,000 for it. And you're like, don't even bring it up unless you're willing to start at eight.
I would understand and agree with you on most cases.
Right.
The Red Sox newspaper.
But you're believing.
You
no. Because
Wiggy,
we're having
own newspaper.
We're having Curtis. We'll never be able to have a factual conversation
okay,
with
we
you.
We can't have a conversation if you just talk.
We can't have a conversation with you when you always want to switch it to like, no matter what anybody says, it's a lie. Your disdain for the Red Sox front office and ownership.
You're sucking up to them.
It has nothing to do with it.
It's only equaled by his disdain for the great Bill Belichick.
Oh, my
right.
God. So
he's
like,
got too many opportunities.
So, right.
He's full of disdain, this
right.
fellow.
Right. So
this
how can we have a conversation when everybody that's in the baseball world has said this? The Red Sox went in at $700 million. But when we bring that up, Curtis goes, I don't believe that. It was all...
Permission to speak freely.
Yes.
Okay. This began in California with a dinner with Juan Soto that went for 3 hours where they didn't talk money, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
According to all the reports.
Because right. we didn't know what the market was.
And it ended with a Zoom call on Saturday morning before he signed without his name being mentioned. And you would have me believe that they offered $700 million, didn't know the resolution of the deal, and sat there and said, how's the weather?
Everybody that is not even the baseball world.
Hey, that looks like a nice hotel. Is that a Holiday Inn?
Do they include breakfast?
So here's Curtis's point, because I'm going to do what he does. So everybody that was following the Juan Soto thing knew that it was going to cost you somewhere close to $700 million. $660, $680, yeah. $700 million. The only people who didn't know that were the Red Sox. But he wants you to believe that. Stop
That's
it.
What he, yes.
Stop it.
All right.
I don't know what you just said.
What I'm saying is, like, what I'm saying to you is they knew that it was going to cost them $700 million to be able to play ball with Juan Soto. So they're not wasting 3 hours and back and forth
right.
and second
they
meetings.
They played ball with the fans, not
you
with Juan Soto.
You know what, Curtis?
Soto.
We'll never be able to have a real... When it comes to Bill and it comes to the Red Sox brass, we'll never be able to have a factual conversation with Curtis because his hatred towards them...
I love baseball.
His hatred towards them...
Is there hatred in his heart?
Oh, it outweighs any common sense.
Right. Not this time of year.
Right. Like,
this is the most joyous time of
it
year.
It really is.
Oh, my God.
I was
right.
at the Pops yesterday. It was awesome.
You were?
Oh, yeah. James loved it. Big day.
Oh, did he enjoy it?
He did. I would just say to Keith Lockhart, fan of the show, I'm sure, if it's the kids' matinee, let's keep it, you know, like Christmas songs that everybody knows.
Oh, they were doing songs
like
he didn't
songs
know?
I never heard in my life. And you have all these little kids.
Any Mannheim Steamroller?
No Mannheim Steamroller. But,
really?
But they do introduce the Pops now as America's Orchestra, and that made me feel good.
I think they deserve to be that.
Incredibly right. talented.
We're going to have a quick hug out during the break, and we will be right back. Well, for the Mets, Juan Soto is still the Juan. To the tune of $765 million, over 15 years.
Not a bad payday.
Reds, were the Red Sox in? Were they there? Were they right there at the end?
Nah, they weren't there. They offered $500 million.
We don't. We do not know.
When did he sign?
Last night.
Okay, so yeah, they weren't in. They weren't there this weekend.
Mm-hmm. This is Mike in the car. Hello, Mike.
Hey, guys. I just wondered why Curtis is so fast to believe this report that they didn't utter Juan Soto's name in the Zoom with Boris, yet he doesn't want to believe the same reporters who said the Red Sox went to $700 million. The same exact reporters. And, by the way, the Mets deal was close to
The people that wrote this story in The Athletic were Will Salmon and Patrick Mooney. Which one of them reported the $700
million? The Athletic had a report that it was the last offer from the Red Sox was 15 years, 700.
Right. I mean, you said the same story. I'm asking where the reporters of this story said that.
Well, I don't know about those exact reporters, but the same magazine.
Okay. Well, there's an op-ed. There's a different stories in every newspaper. What I'm saying is if the Red Sox didn't speak about Juan Soto this weekend, then what they did was play their fans again. They weren't really a legitimate threat to sign him.
Yeah, but that's not what you're saying. You said there was no offer that you don't believe the Red Sox were offering $700 million.
Right. I don't believe they were
so
at all.
So what you're saying is all, and the call is right. The reporters from The Athletic who did have it at $700 million, the Jeff Passons, all these A1 MLB insiders were basically giving us information that wasn't true.
Well, it could be they were fooled like we were by the Boston Red Sox.
So you're really going to play that game? Like with Shohei, they weren't in. There was no meetings, nothing or anything along those lines. So they're going through all this, the meetings. They're there till the 11th hour just to play a game?
Yes, that's what they do best.
How do they do that best? When is the last time they did that best with a player of this caliber?
With Shohei?
They didn't. Would you stop the line with Shohei?
We talked about it for three months.
Oh, my God.
Why are you yelling?
Because you're. It's this false narrative.
So you believe the Red Sox front office is honest and transparent?
No, listen.
No, I'm asking you. Do you believe they're honest?
I'm going to speak it nice and low and quietly.
Okay.
The Red Sox were never in on Shohei last year.
The last time, to answer your question, was probably Chris Sale. Was probably the last guy that they, right? I mean, that they.
Oh, that they tried to sign but didn't?
That they paid big money to.
Right.
I mean,
really. Well, they traded for him.
But the other one.
So
the last guy they probably paid. David Price.
I would say, if you want to go to an example on this, Wiggs, I would say Xander Bogaerts.
But we knew they didn't want Xander Bogaerts.
Okay, but there was a late push.
Right.
I believe that day Pete Abraham had a story, the day that Xander and ultimately signed with the Padres, that they had upped their offer and they're really in on bringing him here, to the point that Ken and myself worked on station imaging about Xander staying.
Yeah.
And then later that day, he was signed with the Padres. The Boston Red Sox front office is elite at spinning people. It's their best strength.
No, because we knew they weren't in on Xander. We knew it. We knew it because they didn't make him an offer.
Okay,
so listen, because I'm going to.
This is a one-way conversation.
Because Curtis, you're one. The way you conversate is you're not conversating with common sense. You're conversating with emotion towards the disdain of how you feel about the Red Sox ownership.
If the Red Sox were legitimately in on Juan Soto, they don't go Saturday and Sunday without talking to the agent about him. I'm sorry.
Yeah. You would think that they would make some kind of a panicked last-minute phone call yesterday and say,
they
hey,
did that Saturday.
We're in.
No, they didn't talk
no,
about
no,
him.
No, they had a Zoom with him. It was obviously about other players.
Right, because Scott Boras had basically said, if you're not willing to come up to 760, there's no need for us
so they weren't all in on him.
No, they were all in on him until it got to a certain point where we go. So in order for any organization, because we did this with Brandon Ayuk.
Yeah.
We believe, based on what the reports out there, the Patriots were all in. He chose to go elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. Do you believe the Patriots were all in on Calvin Ridley?
No.
Do you believe they were, Wiggy?
No.
Okay.
But they told us that.
They told us that they offered him and it was the fiancé's fault. Like, they have morphed into each other. The Patriots and the Red Sox are conducting business to get their fans to think they're doing something.
Speaking of football, as you are, I think we all believe that that Rams-Bills game was the best of the season so far.
Awesome game.
We are going to talk with Boomer Esiason about that, and this week in the NFL next.